please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Director, good morning, Mr. Giordano.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you for being here. Just a couple announcements to begin with. Matt Medina is not going to be here today. At this point, Frank Milstead's absent, as well as Joe Profiri. Dan, do we have Sheriff Daniels? Sheriff Daniels is joining us by telephone.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Morning, Sheriff.
Sheriff.
A couple other announcements. We've been talking about this for several months, but we finally have our new Chief Technology Officer on board. So if I could ask Dan Wilson to stand up. Dan joined us earlier in mid-July. He's been doing phenomenal work. He's been reviewing all of our systems. He's already made several recommendations. Everyone here has been giving him all the things we wanted done over the last 9 months that we didn't have anyone in that position. So he's been a very, very busy man, but we're excited to have him and look forward to great things over the coming years. But I wanted you to all see it. I've been talking about it for so long, I wanted you to actually be able to put a face to a name. So, Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, I wanted to announce we do have one additional new compliance specialist, Amanda Faust. Where are you? I didn't think I told her she was going to be announced today, but Amanda comes to us after a long career with Phoenix PD as a lieutenant. She retired about a year and a half ago, and she joined us earlier this month. I look forward to she's going to be on the compliance side. She's going to have southeastern Arizona, I believe, and she's already jumped right in being trained by Billy Caldwell, and I expect great things out of her. Next announcement is Mark Brachtel. You're all familiar with him. He's been presenting and litigating our cases with Seth Hargraves being reassigned to a new assignment with the Attorney General's office. Mark is going to become the board's liaison and advisor after today's meeting. This is Seth's final meeting, but we're excited for that change, and we're happy for Seth and his new opportunities. And then if I could, and I already apologize to Seth in person, but we ordered him a plaque, and they sent the wrong dates. So I have nothing to present to him today, so I apologize profusely and told him I would run it over to him at a later date. But I do have Cheryl Holliday. Had an opportunity. She worked on our in-service training side for the last several years. She had an opportunity, and Director Mills is not here, so I can't give him a hard time, but they stole her back from us. So she had an opportunity to go work in the director's office for one of the lieutenant colonels. But if I could get Cheryl to come forward, I'd like to recognize her for everything she's done for us.
Good morning.
Hello. Should I just go ahead and sit in his
You should. Yeah, please. He can send someone in place if I sit there. I'll let him know.
Yeah, why not?
Cheryl, we'd like to give this to you. Cheryl Holliday, thank you for your dedicated service in providing advanced training support to more than 14,000 peace officers in the state of Arizona.
Oh, thank you.
June 3rd, 2017 to July 19th, 2019.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Years and I still learn something new every day. And being on the third floor of the main building over there, I still learn every day. So, and it's not as intimidating as people think. So.
Well, they're lucky to have you, and you're sorely missed over here.
All right.
So, thank you for everything you did.
Bye bye.
Thank you. A couple more announcements. John Tellier from the Attorney General's office will be our independent advisor on cases today. And then just one agenda update. If you look at 19-048, we sent out a late-minute agenda update yesterday, but it's the case involving Kyle Hunt. It was in your cases, but that is going to move to it was moved to a consent agenda. He signed a voluntary relinquishment.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, that'll do it for announcements. If you'd like me to go into my director's report, I can do so.
Yes, please do. I didn't see that. You must have already taken Kyle off there, or is it?
Yep, it was.
Oh, okay.
He had been moved up there, but it wasn't on the official agenda that you got.
Okay.
So we made the official agenda. We posted it yesterday and sent it to you.
Thank you.
But I just wanted to make sure you were aware.
Thank you. And please, yes, move right along.
All right, just wanted to cover a few things. We've got a fairly large agenda today, so I'll keep my comments brief. The first thing I want to talk about is our summit training. For those of you who were at the summit in July up in Flagstaff, we're getting rave reviews for the training that the board hosted on Thursday morning. It was a four-hour officer wellness program. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend, but I was given a lot of feedback through Arizona COPS as well as personal feedback that it was very, very well received. And I've actually had some agencies reach out to us wanting Carrie O'Brien's contact information to reach out and have some additional training done at their agency. So I'm very happy with that. He's not here today. I think he left on vacation today. But Steve Entenmann was the driving force behind that. He did a phenomenal job. Yeah, he located and identified Carrie, made all of her travel arrangements, and then he was her handler up in Flagstaff the entire time she was in town. So, again, Steve's not here to personally thank, but he did a phenomenal job. A couple other things. In conjunction with the governor's office, we are undertaking a school resource officer training program where Kip Rustenberg and her team are working through the National Association of School Resource Officers to bring a 1.5-day training here. It was at the request of the governor as well as several state representatives who are looking to have SROs get a little bit additional training in de-escalation and communication skills with the populations they serve. So again, Kip is working on that now, and we hope to have something finalized by the end of the year where we start bringing SROs in. Arizona Post will cover the cost of the tuition as well as, depending on where people come from around the state, we'll be hosting, we'll cover their per diem and their lodging as well. We think it's that important. Right now we're planning to host regional classes, again, to limit the travel from some of our partner agencies who are out in the outlying areas. I've talked about it several times, but in looking at our rules and looking at some things we might want to change down the road, we haven't begun the process yet officially, but we are working with the Arizona State University to do a survey of agency heads across the state. The survey is now complete. It's been done. It's been approved by ASU. I'm going to film a short video, create an introductory email, and hopefully in the next week or two, we're going to get that out to the 160 different agencies in the state department heads, asking for them to give us feedback. A lot of it surrounds pre-employment drug use for applicants, but again, there'll be some other issues on there, and we're looking to compile those facts. And again, my video, my email message will explain that it's confidential. ASU is only going to report back to us in the aggregate numbers, so no one has to worry about it. It's not going to be a public collection of data again, but I think that'll be very helpful for us to give us a framework of what police leaders around the state want to see if any changes to our current rules.
Well, thank you for doing that. I think it's very important we take a look at some of those the rules involving especially marijuana use. I think it's important for us to focus on that and to go back a little bit on the school issues. I had mentioned to you a little bit about threat assessment teams, and I would love to be able to sit with you or your staff on some of the threat assessment team and maybe sometime in the future look at some training there for identifying a risk of a student and managing that risk. That's something that's, I think, equally as important.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And like we've talked about before, several years ago when my predecessor had to change the way we did our finances, one of the biggest hits to us was in-service training. We still were supporting the academies, we were still doing our compliance, but in-service training probably had the biggest hit financially. Now that my predecessor put us in such a good financial position, the board is really healthy today financially, we're able to start increasing our level of training we provide around the state. We've shifted internally some people over to our in-service training side of the house. We're getting ready to bring back an advanced leadership program. We'll probably do one more session of the old program and then look to bring in something new. We're going to be expanding training, and like I said, in the school resource officer program. We've been asked to bring in a background investigator school. We're going to be having three of those in the next several months. We have two we're doing down here, and we're doing one in Prescott in October. So, again, I think the one down here, we already have one class is, I think, full. The other one we've expanded. We were able to partner with Mesa PD and use their training center. Since it's no longer really a hands-on class, we were able to use a bigger venue. And I think we have it open to 70 different – we can bring in 70 students in one of those classes. And again, it's one of those programs that Ben Henry and his team have revamped completely because recognizing that some of the material was outdated. And as you all know, hiring good officers is incredibly important, and that all begins with a very, very thorough and good background investigator. So that's why we're doing that. Some other things we're doing is I was invited last week to speak at the Developmental Disability Coalition meeting. It's a group of professionals who work in a wide variety of service providers that provide service to members of the community who have developmental disabilities. It was a little unusual that we were invited to the table, but I was really thankful to be there because, again, going around the state talking to police executives, all I hear, I've never heard one person say, we don't want to improve the ability of our officers to interact with all members of the community. So I will continue working with that group, and what I'm really kind of finding my role is, I'm a liaison. I was contacted by the Autism Society who wanted to do training. They have a program called Be Safe. It's an outstanding program where it brings in community members with autism and police officers to interact. And it really goes both ways, the communication flow, and it helps officers understand how to interact with someone with autism, as well as it helps people with autism understanding how to act with members of law enforcement. So it's a really good program, and I was able to connect them to places. They wanted to connect with Flagstaff, Douglas, Yuma. So I was able to put them, it was really nice because I had the ability to put them in touch all over the state to begin starting to prepare to put those training classes together. So I'll continue my work in that area because I believe it's very, very important. The last thing I want to talk about is earlier this week, actually I think it was the end of last week, Kip Rustenberg and her team met with the 100 Club as well as members from the FBI NAA, reference officer resiliency training. As you remember earlier in the year, Steve Stahl and his group from the FBI NAA hosted a regional training program for, I think it was 13 people from around the state to train the trainer program on officer resiliency. We were going to start helping them facilitate those classes around the state. Kip was contacted by the 100 Club and said, hey, we're getting ready to do something very similar. How about we partner? So Kip called all the stakeholders together last week. They sat down, started brainstorming, and now we're going to have a joint partnership, leverage our resources, and start pushing that out statewide to all the peace officers in the state. I'm really excited about that. It's in the infancy stages now, and I'll keep the board updated as we progress through that. Again, I'm keeping my comments a little bit brief today because we do have a fairly heavy agenda, but at this time I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone might have reference anything I discussed.
Comments, questions? Having none, thank you very much for everything.
Thank you, Chairman.
And we will move on now to our consent agenda, which calls for a motion. I think that you've all had a chance to review and go over the consent agenda, and I would ask for a motion to approve.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the consent agenda with the one additional item that was added today.
Second.
And those were Andy and...
I'm sorry, Alan Rodbell.
I see this big sign as a reminder that...
I covered it with something else.
Apologies, Mr.
That's all right.
Oh, no,
Andy puts these big signs in front of me that... to remind us of so. Okay, thank you. I have a motion. I have a second. Is there any further discussion on the consent agenda? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. And those opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to our next item. Mr. Hargraves, and hate to see you leave. Seth, you've been a great addition here to ASPOST. We're going to miss you, and thanks for everything you've done here. It's very much appreciated, and I wish you all the best going over to the AGs and getting back into what you're doing there. So thank you.
Thank you. Are we on agenda item E?
Yes, sir.
Are you recusing yourself?
I am going to recuse myself. Let the record reflect. You would... take over for me.
This is a petition from the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office asking the board to consider juvenile indiscretion for applicant Kevin Rizel, who had disclosed two burglary-related convictions, one in 1999, one in 2000. In your packet, you have a memo going over kind of an overview of the juvenile indiscretion qualifications. Looking over that kind of shows you how to go through your analysis to determine whether or not juvenile indiscretion is appropriate, and I kind of refer you to that, and otherwise I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Mr. Hargreaves? Is there someone, the applicant, representing here?
Yes,
you are. Oh. Is this an opportunity for them to speak?
Yeah, if you want, I don't really have anything to include other than what was in the packet, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions?
I did have one question.
Yes, sir.
Armed burglary. He had a pocket knife in his pocket when he went into the residence.
Okay, so it wasn't a firearm?
No. And it was on a dare. He was 13 years old when this occurred, and he was there. He first broke into a school, did some criminal damage, and then while on probation for that, he was dared by his little juvenile friends to break into a neighbor's house. He did so. And he had a pocket knife on him and was charged with that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Further questions? Okay. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Paul Ayler, I'll move that the board find that the information submitted is sufficient for the board to determine that the conduct constituted juvenile discretion and therefore grant appointment.
Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Kirsten. Mark Annell, second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
And we have a quorum without me, right? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're back. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hargreaves. We'll move on to the next case.
Yes, this is agenda item F. A petition from the Sedona Police Department asking for the board determination that the applicant's drug use was for experimentation. This has to do with applicant Tristicia Rose Kendall, who admitted to snorting cocaine 5 times from March to June 2001 when she was 21 years of age. Under your rules, the use and the age, it's determined not to be for experimentation. Under your rules, there's a provision for the board to consider that to used to be for experimentation. Again, I refer you to the memo in the packet, kind of an overview of the rule and the requirements. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Hargreaves? Would Sedona like to comment? Or?
There's no questions.
Okay. Having none, I would ask for a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I just have one question. How old is the applicant now?
Now?
Yeah.
It would appear probably about 38, 39.
Oh, I got you. Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion, questions?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Pittman again.
Yes, sir.
I move to grant the petition for the determination that the drug used by Tristica Rose Kendall was experimental.
All right. I have a motion. Is there a second, please?
Jamie Kelly, second.
And I have a second. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 And those opposed?
Nay.
And the motion carries.
Who was
enabled? Chief Kelly. Chief Kelly. All right, Mr. Hargreaves, we're moving on to G.
This is a petition from the Tucson Police Department for a determination that multiple shoplifting incidents totaling just under $1,500 constitutes juvenile indiscretion under your rules. In this case, deals with applicant Evan Hasterock. He disclosed that between the ages of 12 and 16, he shoplifted a couple different times, totaling about just under $1,500. The applicant is currently 26 years of age. The memo in your packet kind of, again, gives an overview and summary of the appropriate rule and qualifications for you to make the determination whether you feel that the conduct constituted juvenile indiscretion. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sorry, go ahead.
Seth, these were separate incidents. Were they misdemeanor shoplifting? Because I think to be a felony, it has to be over $1,000, and I don't think you can aggregate it on shoplifting. Separate incidents.
Yeah, I'm just going by what was in the letter from Tucson. I don't believe we have the specific documents, but it's my understanding that they were several incidents over.
We have a representative here from Tucson that might be able to. Please come on up, Captain. Thank you, sir.
The indiscretions were over a period of time. They were self-disclosed during the background between the ages of 12, and Mr. Hasterhoff was consistent in his application and his Arizona Post application that he was no greater than 15. 16 was the year that we used, along with the polygrapher, to say when being questioned on or before or after this date, 16, and he passed, successfully passed. So we used 16 as the top end to account for all 15 years, 364 days prior to his 16th birthday. Therefore, he is outside that 10-year number. He is currently 26 years old and in his 16th week at the academy.
I'm sorry, go right ahead.
And is it your understanding that these were misdemeanor shoplifts?
Yes. He reported several different incidents, none of which he was arrested for. He was, I think the max value of one was just under $1,000, where he reported that he had shoplifted from a clothing store on multiple occasions, totaling $1,000. Oh. So the total amount for shoplifting was estimated at like $1,480 over this time period.
Any other questions or comments for the captain? Thank you, sir. And may I have a motion, please?
I'll make a motion. Alan Rodbell. I move the board find the information submitted is sufficient for the board to determine that the conduct constitutes juvenile indiscretion, therefore grant appointment.
Thank you, Chief Rodbell. Is there a second, please?
Mark Dannell, second.
Sheriff Dannell, second. Is there any further discussion on this case? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 And those opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you very much. And we'll be moving on to the next one, Mr. Hargraves.
This is agenda item H. Buckeye Police Department petition for a waiver of the board's standards and qualifications regarding past criminal conduct, drug activity for applicant Jason Quigley. In the application process, applicant Quigley disclosed having sold marijuana twice as a college student approximately 23 years ago when he was 18 or 19 years old. Given the conduct and the age of the time, it would not qualify for juvenile indiscretion or experimentation. They are making a petition under R13-4-103G. Again, the packet is a memo regarding the relevant issues here and the applicable rule, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Hargrave?
I have one.
Yes.
So in the packet, it says that she's currently 22?
This is, are you on agenda H, Jason Quigley?
Emily,
this is Jason Quigley.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll back up.
That was, yeah, okay.
I'm sorry.
Any other questions, comments? Yes, sir, Mr. Ailey.
Mr. Hargraves, in the comments under your memorandum, you cite a previous case that's presently in litigation involving a similar issue.
Yes, you had a case before you where there was a one-time sale of marijuana. You denied certification on that. That case was appealed. The denial has been upheld, but it is still in the appeal process. There's precedent on this particular issue, at least.
Do you see our vote on this particular matter having any effect on that litigation?
Well, the vote on this matter, it's a different board makeup than it was at that time. There were a few different members. That case is now in the Court of Appeals. This matter would not be part of the record. They may try to bring it in, but that would be up to the court whether or not to allow. But there is that potential.
May I ask a question about that? Please. So, and I don't remember, and I was on the board, the age of the individual of the case that is going to appeal?
18 or 19.
At the time of the offense?
Correct.
The age difference in terms of length of time since? Any idea? Or the age today, actually?
Off the top of my head, I don't know that. I don't. I think it might have been 5, but I don't want to speculate because I don't know for certain.
It would make a difference to me. Is there somewhere we could find that out?
Well, that case isn't really before you, but I don't think it...
There's 20...
It wasn't that long.
Difference.
It wasn't... It was much less than 23 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Is there anyone here that would like to speak on this gentleman's behalf or this... on behalf? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. My name is Bob Sanders, the Assistant Police Chief of the City of Buckeye, so I'm here to represent Chief Hall. We appreciate your time and energy into this case, and not knowing the fact patterns of the other case that's on appeal. So just to frame this, the command hiring decision was, if 19 years ago or 23 years plus, if Mr. Quigley would have came in and said, hey, I really want to be a police officer, what do I need to do? Probably the response back to him was, you better wait more than 5 years. So you better come back about 20 years and show us that you've been a service to the community. We probably wouldn't have recommended that he had to join the Army to prove himself, but in this case, he served 8 years in the military, was deployed twice, and so basically that's why we're here today petitioning.
Questions, comments? Yes, sir.
Chief, were the amounts of marijuana, were we talking about small amounts or what?
A cap full, like a bottle cap.
Okay. Questions or comments? Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, sir.
May I have a motion, please?
Paul Ehler, I move that the board grant the request for waiver of the board's standards qualifications regarding past criminal conduct, drug activity, based upon the information submitted by the Buckeye Police Department. I believe that the best interests of the law enforcement profession would be served and public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by the waiver.
Chris Pittman seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Ehler. Thank you, Mr. Pittman. I have a motion and a second. Further discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Just one question for me. So without knowing the results of this pending one, since it is pending, I'm going to have to vote nay.
Okay. So noted. And the motion still carries. Thank you very much. And we're going to move on to the next. Mr. Hargraves.
Next is agenda item I. It's a petition from the Phoenix Police Department for waiver of the board's 7-year restriction under R13-4-105A14 for applicant Emily Wojewicz. The applicant had admitted to using Adderall on one occasion in July 2013 when she was 16 years old. Under your rules, the use of a dangerous drug or narcotic for any purpose within the last 7 years is prohibited. They are submitting a petition under 103G for a waiver of that seven-year time frame. If you were to grant that waiver, you would be approving the possibility of certification for someone that's 10 months short of meeting that minimum requirement.
Questions, comments for Mr. Hargraves?
I have a question. Seth, the one time Adderall was an automatic disqualifier, is that the difference today? Can we make a change in Adderall?
You had a substantive policy statement, and that was for a particular kind of use. Here it was for experimentation, so it wouldn't have fallen within the purview of the substantive policy statement.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you.
Any other questions? Anyone like to come up and speak on behalf? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Commander Darren Viner from the Phoenix Police Department's Employment Services Bureau. I'm here this morning on behalf of Chief Williams to request waiver on the 7-year restriction for applicant Emily Wodowicz. Police recruit applicant Emily Wodowicz, who is currently 22 years old, admits to using prescription drug Adderall one time as a juvenile on June of 2013 for experimentation purposes. Ms. Wodowicz indicated she used Adderall at age 16 during her sophomore year of high school out of curiosity of the effects of the drug. We have verified the reported usage with a polygraph examination, which she has successfully passed. Ms. Wodowicz has since obtained two associate's degrees and participated in numerous volunteer projects as a young adult serving in the communities of Socorro, New Mexico, San Francisco, California, and New Orleans, Louisiana. While a college student at New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology, she was placed on the dean's list for academics and held a leadership position in her college sorority as the philanthropic chair. Moreover, Ms. Wodowicz has held employment as a substitute teacher and is currently employed as a federal transportation security officer for the TSA. During her time with the TSA, Ms. Wodowicz has been promoted into the role of acting lead transportation security officer and received the TSA Employee of the Month Award in April of 2019. Lastly, she has volunteered her time with the Albuquerque Police Department as a member of their Discipline Review Board in 2018. I'm asking the board to make a determination that Ms. Wodowicz's reported drug use 6 years ago as a juvenile does not jeopardize the public welfare or safety, nor tarnish the law enforcement profession. Ms. Wodowicz has successfully completed and passed a full background investigation pursuant to Rule 13-4106 and Rule 13-407.
Thank you, Commander. Any questions? Thank you, sir. And having none, may I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Pittman. I move that the board grant the request for the waiver of 7-year restriction from AACR 13-4105A14 based upon the information submitted by the Phoenix Police Department. I believe that the best interest of law enforcement profession would be served and the public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by the waiver.
Thank you, Deputy Pittman. Is there a second, please?
Paul Euler, I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries. Mr. Hargraves, moving on to the next, please.
Mr. Chairman, may I say something?
Please.
So you're about to go into cases, right?
No.
No.
One more. And I know you wanted to make a comment after that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Here you go. Right there.
Okay. Thank you.
Please, sir. Go right ahead.
This is agenda item J, petition from the Phoenix Police Department for a waiver of the board's 7-year restriction from R13-4-105A14 for applicant Eric Fulton. Before we get too much into it, there is in your packet some medical information. I'm just ask you to be cautious not to disclose any medical information in your discussions. Again, this particular applicant is asking for a waiver of the drug rules that he used in either May or June 2015 or February 2019. There is some discrepancy in the documentation in your file. Either way, it's short time use of marijuana gummies in either 2015 or 19 when he was either 39 or 43 years old. Depending upon what the actual date is, you would be granting a waiver of someone that's 2 years and 10 months short or 6 months short of the 7-year restriction. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments for Mr. Hargraves? Having none, is there someone here that would like to represent Mr. Fulton?
Hello again.
Commander?
Before I get started, I just want to mention that we did, in anticipation of this, we did contact Mr. Fulton and got a separate waiver from him specific to the medical information that I'm going to share with you today. So the issue Mr. Hargraves just cited regarding the medical information. I will be sharing that with you per his request. Again, I'm here this morning on behalf of Chief Jerry Williams to request a waiver on for the experimentation of a narcotic drug pursuant to Arizona Administrative Code 13-4105C for applicant Eric Fulton. Mr. Fulton consumed marijuana gummies at the age of 39 on three separate occasions. His last usage was June 2015, approximately 4 years ago. His marijuana usage is due to a unique set of circumstances, which are as follows. In 2015, during a routine doctor's visit while living in California, Mr. Fulton was diagnosed with leukemia and was immediately admitted into the hospital where he underwent chemotherapy treatment for a period of 35 days. Mr. Fulton's treatment caused his appetite to become suppressed, and his oncologist recommended medical marijuana to assist with the chemotherapy side effects. His wife took a written recommendation to Mr. Fulton's oncologist, or from Mr. Fulton's oncologist, to a local dispensary and purchased marijuana gummies. Mr. Fulton consumed the gummies three times between the months of May and June of 2015. When Mr. Fulton identified he was not experiencing any relief, he discontinued usage of the gummies. As of this date, his leukemia is in full remission, and he has been cleared by an Arizona post-certified physician for certification. We have a letter from Mr. Fulton's oncologist, which briefly outlines Mr. Fulton's medical condition and his support of medical marijuana for use with his patients. Mr. Fulton comes with a clean background with a very good employment history. He is an Army veteran and a former police officer from DeKalb County Police Department in Georgia, as well as the Tempe Police Department. While with the Tempe Police Department, Mr. Fulton suffered a back injury and was released while on probation in 2007. In 2010, he became a military contractor as an EOD K-9 handler and deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. After his contract expired, he returned to the United States in 2014. He believes that his exposure to various explosive material while in Iraq and Afghanistan is the cause for his leukemia diagnosis. I respectfully request the board consider the unique circumstances, for Mr. Fulton's narcotic marijuana use and grant an exception pursuant to Rule 13-4105C. Aside from the aforementioned usage, Mr. Fulton has never used any illegal drugs in his lifetime. He has served our nation in the Army and as a police officer and has obtained a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from the American Intercontinental University. I'm asking for the board to make a determination that Mr. Fulton's reported drug use for the treatment of cancer does not jeopardize the public welfare or safety, nor tarnish the law enforcement profession. Mr. Fulton has successfully completed and passed a full background investigation pursuant to R134106 and R134007. And I'd just like to add, there were questions regarding the dates of the letter submitted by Mr. Fulton's oncologist explaining his referral for the use of marijuana during his treatment. It is apparent that the letter is dated with the time frame the letter was requested and drafted. Although the letter does not include the dates of treatment, the logical inference is that the letter was addressing the time frame in question during Mr. Fulton's treatment.
Questions or comments for the commander?
Just one question. Do you know when the last time he was drug tested?
I do not.
Okay, thank you. I just have a comment. So, not arguing anything you said, Commander, and I think it's an issue that we'll be faced with. You're the first one to bring something like this to us forward, but this board's going to have to think in terms of the precedent that we set, whether we bring all these cases up before us and we make decisions one at a time, or we create a policy that everyone knows about. You have a situation where we're surrounded by states, including our own, and it has marijuana usage for medical purposes, and we have to determine whether or not that's going to be enough for us to waive our current rules. And so I see this as a much bigger issue. I see it as setting a precedent in terms of either policy or procedure, and that whether or not we should think about holding back on this and allowing the rules committee or whatever group reviews the rules and makes recommendations to take this kind of situation into consideration when that time comes. Otherwise, we'll be seeing this, I think, time and time again. So this is bigger than just this one case, and I certainly feel for this individual and
and the process he's gone through, and I applaud the fact that he's doing well. I just think this is a huge issue for the state of Arizona and this board, and I think we need to think this through in terms of how we go forward in these kinds of cases.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your comment. Any other comments?
Just for clarification, we're looking at this was the we would be looking at the 2 years and 10 months
yes,
waiver, sir. Not the current 6 months or 6 years and 6 months.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I would make a comment, and I thank you for your for what you said on that. This is a big issue we're facing in the state. Every agency and even the sheriffs with detention officers are not certified that follow these rules and regulations and codes, and it's something that the board's working on. I know you, Director Giordano, is working on that now with staff to look at these new codes, regulations. I think we see that on a federal level as well, but I hate to put agencies in a position where many times they're already in the academy or they are in the process and we leave those people hanging. It has kind of been case by case. And I think we need to continue looking at that. And of course, the board can vote as they see fit. But I would just ask that our committee that's working on this, you know, kind of instill some urgency, if you would, from me to you to get these new changes or whatever they are made up. And having said that, is there any other questions before I ask for a motion? Okay. Having none, it is a something we're going to face. So having no more else, I would ask for a motion on this matter.
Mr. Chairman, Andrew LaFever, I move that the board grant the request for a waiver of the 7-year restriction from Arizona Administrative Code R13-4105-814 based upon the information submitted by Phoenix Police Department. I believe that the best interests of law enforcement professional would be served and the public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by the waiver.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Chris Pittman will second that.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion on that? Yes, sir, Mr. Hill.
Chairman, the only comment I'd like to make is I think the facts in this case are particularly compelling given the applicant's medical condition. I think all of us suspect that a lot of times the people that get medical marijuana cards don't really have legitimate medical needs. But I think in this man's case, he obviously did. And so that's why I'm going to vote in favor of it.
Appreciate that comment. Any others? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And those, I'm sorry, Sheriff, what was that?
Aye. Yes.
Okay. And those opposed?
Nay.
I have two. Yes. So the motion carries. Thank you very much. And we'll be moving on to.
If I'll make a comment.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
So I want to make a quick comment about the agenda, if it's okay. And you have to tell me if I'm out of step or this is a new item or a new agenda item. One is just a question or direction to staff, if possible. As we look at changing the rules and reviewing the rules, I would ask that you compile a list of those decisions we've already made as a board and the parameters of those decisions, the length of times, the amounts, the ages, and just so we have a clear picture of what we've done already as a board in terms of our decision-making. And the second thing I want to mention, actually, Sheriff, you brought this up, and I appreciate that. I was greatly concerned. I don't know if the Arizona Post Board has a role in this, so you can tell me I don't have a role in this, and that's okay. But we're seeing a lot of cases where people that, on the face, are not qualified to be sitting in academies. And yet they're in academies, and now we're deciding as a board whether we're going to pull them from academies or grant waivers. And that seems to be something that's greatly concerning to me, is that, one, we're taking academy seats away from people that perhaps could be in the academy, or two, we have to make the decision of pulling somebody out
who believes that they've been hired and, in fact, are going to progress through the system. And so it's a very awkward position. And I don't know if we have the authority, responsibility, ability to even send out to departments, we need to give the waiver before you send someone to an academy. So I don't know the answer to that.
Well, that sounds like that is kind of falls under agenda item M, future agenda items.
Okay.
So I think kind of noting to staff that maybe that issue come back before the full board properly agendized for discussion.
Okay. Thanks for your guidance.
That's a very good point.
Thank you.
It is something that's taken place. So thanks for giving that up.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, we're going to move on to final action cases. Mr. Hargis. Case number 17-187.
Yes, this is the case involving Mark Mann. This case was before the board in August of 2018. At that time, was presented by compliance specialist William Caldwell. The overview in that matter at the time had an allegation that an internal investigation commissioned by the Buckeye Police Department determined that Assistant Chief Mann violated city and departmental policies. And there was a kind of recommendation of staff of no action agency discretion. The case had been reviewed prior to going to the board, and it didn't appear that there were any actionable violations. Given that past history by this board, policy violations you did not initiate on. However, at that August meeting, the board did vote to initiate proceedings. You added a new allegation involving dishonesty and additional rule violations. One of the rule violation additions, willfully providing false information in connection with obtaining or reactivating certified status, wasn't really applicable to that situation. Since the time the board initiated, there was a request for a hearing. In reviewing this file, I'm bringing it back to you, asking you to reconsider your previous vote to initiate proceedings. It is not believed that the added allegation of dishonesty that we would be able to meet our burden to prove that at a hearing. And again, there were just the additional rule violations would not be applicable. So I'm asking the board to reconsider its previous motion to initiate proceedings, strike the additional the additions from that meeting, and go with what the initial staff recommendation was, which was no action, agency discretion. Be happy to answer any questions. And I believe Mr. Mann's attorney is present as well.
Any questions or comments from Mr. Hargreaves? Okay. Is there a comment or anything from the attorney, please? Morning, sir.
Good morning. Members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. My name is Mark Hansen. I'm with the Ledbetter Law Firm in Cottonwood, Arizona. I'm here with Officer Mark Mann this morning. Officer Mann brings a rich 38 years of experience in law enforcement, ranging all the way from patrol officer to chief. He is currently an officer with the Cottonwood Police Department, and as I'm sure the board members have noted, he serves there under the highest possible reviews and performance ratings, and at his recent one-year review with Cottonwood Police Department, it was noted that Officer Mann serves his community with the highest degree of integrity and professionalism. This investigation and the complaint has been a cloud over Officer Mann's professional and personal life for the last several years. We simply ask that the board accept the recommendation from the Attorney General's office and close this complaint against Officer Mann, allow him to move forward with his life, allow him to continue to serve the people of Cottonwood and the Verde Valley. Does the board have any questions?
Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, sir. So I have a question for Seth real quick about the motion. So, Seth, in this motion, does it require a number of different actions or the motion itself suffices?
Well, depending upon what the board wants to do, the first part would be whether to grant. Well, actually, I don't know if you have independent advice on that.
Again, depending on what the board decides they want to do, the motion would be to grant the motion for reconsideration and rescind the determination to initiate proceedings.
Okay.
And then would there be a second so far as no action agency discretion, or would that be included within the...
I think that's the rationale is subsumed within the motion.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. All right.
I make a motion, Alan Rodbell. I move to grant the state's motion for reconsideration, rescinding the board's prior action and voting to initiate proceedings and then vote to resolve in the future.
I'm not sure there's anything to resolve in the future.
Fine. Let me drop that part.
Can we start over? That's up to you.
I'd be more willing to drop that part. Can we start over or just drop that part? Let me go ahead and start. I move to grant the state's motion for reconsideration, rescind the board's prior action of voting to initiate proceedings.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Tom Kelly.
Second. I have a second. Tom Kelly, further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to the next case is 17-177. Mr. Coast.
Thank you, Chairman Mark Brechtel with the Attorney General's Office.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. This is a motion for reconsideration filed by the respondent and respondent's counsel who are here, and they will argue their motion shortly. Respondent's counsel just requested that I introduce the brief backdrop to the case to bring everybody up to speed. This is a case that was heard by an administrative law judge on March 5th, 2019. The judge issued a decision and order on April 24th, 2019. On May 15th, 2019, the board adopted the ALJ's decision and order and entered an order of revocation on Luis Ruiz, who was a Tucson police officer. Subsequently, respondent's counsel has filed a motion to reconsider, and I will turn it over to him.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Mike Story on behalf of Luis Ruiz, who's here. Mark summed it up well, and basically what's happening here was paralleled at the lower level. And I'll explain that in a minute. Just a brief overview of the case. I'm not going into the facts, but sort of the procedural history that led us to the controversy here. Luis and his squad were assigned. They were to get off at 3 a.m. There was an order or a request by the acting sergeant that they continue on. Luis did not respond out in the field. Members of his squad did. The issue became two. One was their insubordination, and two was their untruthfulness that followed. Because later, Luis was questioned, hey, did you hear about this order? What happened? Did you know everyone else went out? Essentially, the night after it happened, he was questioned by the sergeant. There was an interchange. The sergeant said, look, based on what you're telling me, I'm just going to take some hours from you. Will you accept that? Yes. All right. Fast forward 3 months later, the lieutenant, a gal named Jamie Brady, looked at this with the sergeant and said, wait a minute, I'm seeing more to this. I'm seeing untruthfulness at the time and maybe insubordination. There was then a meeting between the lieutenant, the sergeant, and Luis in her office where they went over this event at length. There was a report it went on for an hour. So what happened was, as a result of this interchange, Brady initiated an internal affairs investigation. It escalated, went to OPS at TPD, and there was a finding of untruthfulness. He was fired. So I handled the appeal at the lower level. And what happened was, I went to, and 99 times out of 100, you're going to these hearings, whether they're in front of an administrative law judge or a commission, counsel, whatever it is, and you're arguing the facts. He did it or didn't. Or, two, the discipline was too much. That's the two arguments, basically. Well, here, it was unique. What I went to them and said, look, there is a Title 38 violation based on this meeting in the office. And, of course, Title 38, what I'm referring to is the officer's Bill of Rights. And what I was saying was he was not afforded the protections those require when there is an interview. And I brought that up as a legal issue at the hearing to appeal his termination. Now, the commission looked at this and said, wait a minute, we're here to decide facts, not law. And I explained to them, wait a minute, you make determinations of admissibility all the time, that's law. Well, they said, we're not going to decide that. So I said, okay, time out, let me take it to Superior Court, because I think you need to, you should. Superior Court, we briefed it, had arguments in front of a Superior Court judge. He came down and said, wait a minute, Commission, you should decide this. This is a matter of law. You decide fact and law. Go decide it. So it came back down. And we had a full-blown hearing. The Commission decided two things. One, legally, yes, he had his Title 38 rights violated. And two, as a result of this, he's not terminated anymore. And they reversed it. All right, which brings us to post. And basically the same thing happened. You know that all these things start anew. It's not binding what happens in these commissions to the post. So what happens is we have a hearing. Basically the same thing, same witnesses, same everything. I bring this issue up again. And Mark and I discussed it before. He knew I was going to bring it up. He said a couple of things. He didn't think the motion had merit, my legal argument, as did the person down in Tucson. And he also said, I don't think the administrative law judge should rule on this. Same as I heard below. And I'm not blaming Mark. They're very good arguments because Title 38 is not very well litigated. There's not much law to it. So, in a nutshell, the administrative law judge, we brought our legal arguments in front of him. He took a break and he came back and said, I'm not going to rule either way. I'm not going to rule on it. And really didn't give much legal reason why, just said I'm not doing it. Essentially the same thing the Tucson Commission did. So we proceeded with the hearing without the relief I sought, without the ruling I sought, and it resulted in the revocation, the findings that you got, which was a couple of counts of untruthfulness, and resulted in the revocation. Where we're at right now is he made a mistake, the administrative law judge. He should have ruled on this legal issue. We both argued it. We briefed it. It's clear. I mean, it's not clear who wins, but it's clear what the issue is. If what I'm asking the board to do is this, to say, look, go back to the administrative law judge, rule on this legal issue. If you find in favor of Mr. Brachtel, it moves on, and we might even be binding. I would stipulate we were bound on the same findings and same result. But if you rule in my favor and there was a violation, consider the relief I'm seeking, and then maybe it changes the outcome. If you don't do that, which, of course, you don't have to, I will. My next step, of course, will be Superior Court. That's the next level of appeal. And I'm anticipating, there's no reason not to, that the Superior Court's going to find the same thing Superior Court Judge in Tucson did. Because it was very well founded, based in law. It was a long opinion. It wasn't just one of these one line things. So it seems like it's going to cause Mr. Brachtel and I a ton of work to now brief this up to the Superior Court Judge, who will have to decide two things. One, should he have made this ruling? Or two, what should that ruling have been? My sense is he's going to say, no, you rule on it below. So that's the logical step as far as I'm concerned. I'm not arguing the merits of the motion, and I know Mark, I don't want to waste time with us saying who wins that. But at the very least, the administrative law judge should rule on the legal issue itself. And I would argue I would like a different administrative law judge than the one we had. Nothing, no criticism, but just to look at it anew. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Mr. Brachtel?
Mark Brachtel again. So the standard for consideration for the board on this motion to reconsider is whether the OWA judge committed irregularity, errors of law, or an abuse of discretion in the judge's decision and order. In your packet is a copy of the judge's decision and order. And in it, the judge was very specific that the judge heard argument on this particular issue, whether Title 38 was applicable in this particular OWA proceeding. And on page 6 of the judge's decision and order at paragraph 25. The judge writes in the decision and order that he heard argument and that he specifically asked the respondent and respondent's counsel whether there was a remedy within Title 38 for what counsel was requesting. And there was an acknowledgement from respondent's counsel that there is no remedy available for any violation, even if proven under Title 38, with respect to the administrative hearing that we were there. And specifically, the judge states, Officer Ruiz acknowledges that Section 38.1104 does not provide remedy for any proven violations. The administrative law judge then issued a verbal ruling denying Officer Ruiz's request to present evidence on the issue. So the state's argument at hearing was that there was, because there was no remedy, there was no probative value in continuing to allow cross-examination of witnesses. And that was the judge's ruling. Under the case law cited in the state's response to respondent's motion of reconsideration, is spelled out that so long as a fair trial was provided and that there was not evidence of an abuse of discretion, that the motion to reconsider should be denied. And that's the state's position, that respondent's motion for reconsideration, for rehearing, should be denied.
Yeah. Any questions, comments?
I just have a question. And this is a little bit of an education process, because I've never seen anything like this before. So if are we bound by fruits of the poisonous tree? If a process is somehow not followed, does that have any impact, the fact that the charge was a false statement to this board?
It does not, and that's pointed out in the state's response, that for there to be that type of remedy, the legislature would state that in its statutes and in its rules, specifically state that there is an exclusionary remedy available.
Okay. All right. Mark's absolutely right, but I just want to add, Mark's absolutely correct in what he's saying. But my position, and I think there's been members of the board that have been present when we've advocated for changes to Title 38, one of the flaws of Title 38, in our opinion, from our end, is it provides all these rules and what you must provide as far as rights to officers. But as Mark correctly points out, at the end of these rights, it doesn't say, if there is a violation, such and such results. And that's a flaw in that statute, which was recognized by the commission in Tucson and said, we're not just going to hide behind, well, you can just flagrantly do these things. We're going to fashion a remedy ourselves. And that is kind of typically what happens in common law when it's not provided statutorily. And so Mark correct in what he's stating. My argument was, if you find a violation, there should be a result. There should be a penalty or some sort of sanction. And they adopted my suggestion in the commission. And whether the judge would do it or not, we don't know, but that's a second question I'd be asking at the time if he ruled in my favor. So it's not really a moot point as far as no remedy. I successfully argued a remedy at one point. I think I could do it again, maybe not. And so that's why I would ask for that further determination by the judge. So it is very novel and very, this argument has not been made. You won't find any case law or anywhere.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, just trying to understand the question that the chief just asked for me. So as I heard the question asked, if somebody has violated post rules, which is what we're here to rule on as a body, but there is something that happens in the investigation at the department level that could rise to a violation, we're now being asked to not rule on the post violations because something happened somewhere else? I mean, I think that's the question you were asking, Chief.
That, Mark Brachtel for the state, that would have been the respondent's ultimate argument at the OWA hearing, that if there was a finding that there was a violation of due process by the employer, in this case the Tucson Police Department, that it would be an exclusionary rule would be created for purposes of the administrative hearing, and that it would then apply to this board. That was respondent's argument. And the state just pointed out to get there has to be a remedy in the statutes, and it has to be a mandate by the legislature to create that. And there are actually statutes in insurance law where it's specifically written in there that if X occurs, then evidence is precluded. That does not exist in Title 41 or Title
38. Thank you.
Anything else?
Mr. Chair, I need to recuse myself.
Let that be noted. And no other questions, comments. I would ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion. Alan Roddell, based on my last question, I'm going to move to deny the respondent's motion for rehearing review.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Andrew LaFever, I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And the motion carries. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to case number 17-092. Mr. Brackley.
Thank you, Chairman. In front of you is a proposal for a consent agreement involving Officer Nelu Padilla with the Phoenix Police Department. In the proposal, there are a few things that I will bring to your attention. There is a it's written in the proposal that Arizona Post does not recommend discipline. So this consent agreement is being submitted to the board from the state's perspective as open-ended as far as your decision on discipline, except for one caveat, and that's, again, in the consent agreement, that both parties agree in this particular consent agreement that the board may not impose a sanction of revocation. And I believe when Mr. Wilson speaks today, he'll explain that he needed that clause included to agree to submitting this case to the board. So with that being said, there is a small amount of backdrop that I'd like to share with the board. So the this is a case involving excessive force, and the date of the incident was on September 12, 2015. The board initiated a complaint about 2 years later on September 20, 2017. Later that year, in December of 2017, a consent agreement proposal was submitted to the board. And in that proposal, both parties proposed that the case settle, resolve for 240 hours of retroactive discipline. And at that board meeting, a video was shown. The incident in question was, a part of the incident in question was captured on video, and that was shown to the board. The board rejected the consent agreement without comment. And so now we are here with a new consent agreement. And in this particular case, once again, Post is not recommending discipline. However, Officer Padilla is recommending a change in discipline compared to the last proposal, which would be 240 hours of concurrent suspension, but in addition, 80 additional hours of prospective discipline. So a recommendation from respondent is for a total of 320 hours of suspension. So referring the board to the consent agreement itself, there are just a few more additions. In this particular consent agreement, the first nine paragraphs provide some context to what led up to the video itself. And in it, there were three separate calls for service regarding an individual at Metro Center Mall. The particular individual from the calls for service was making threatening comments, threatening statements. And the first two calls for service, and I'm referring again to paragraphs 1 through 9, the officers ended up clearing the call, but they were called back. And so by the third call for service, which is that same particular night, Officer Padilla and a second officer responded. And as they were arriving, the suspect threw a rock or a large object through a plate glass window at a shopping mall. Now, that throwing the object through the plate glass window was captured on the video. So why are we here? The individual was arrested, but what happened was, and it's on the video itself, is that the suspect laid down onto the ground. After he broke the window, he laid down onto the ground. He crossed his legs. He placed his hands behind his head and locked his fingers. The state's position, and what happened next was Officer Padilla then jumped on the back of the suspect, and the suspect was taken into custody. The state's position is that the force that was used in this case, the jumping on the back and what was necessary to then handcuff the suspect, was excessive. And standard for the board to consider, and the state wanted to provide a legal backdrop for the state to consider, would be the state statute on justification of physical force for law enforcement, 13409. And in it, the statute specifically states that the force must be immediately necessary to effect an arrest. And what happened in this case was the suspect submitted and self-surrendered and was non-combative in those several seconds before the officer got to him and the officer decided to jump on his back to cuff him. So that's the strength of the state's position, that there was excessive force. And I don't believe that that will be contested by the respondent or his counsel, because that brought us to the table to negotiate a settlement, and that's what we're here for, to offer to the board. Are there any questions at this point? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the board. Eric Wilson on behalf of Padilla. Before you right now is a consent agreement. That's when two cooks get in the kitchen and we cook up something. And we do it for all kinds of reasons, not to be mentioned here, because those are protected in the rules of evidence. But for the purpose of compromise and also, in this case, consistency for the board. Now, what's important that was highlighted is the agreement that's in front of you. I trust you've all had an opportunity to read it, but there are some areas that need to be pointed out. As counsel said before, earlier in January of 2018, myself and the other cook in the kitchen, we came to an agreement. 240 hours, the time that this officer has already served after his 2015 incident, was enough. And when I stand before you here today with that same argument, because this board has meted out discipline to similar cases, similar conduct with identical rule violations. Consider, and then that is highlighted, obviously, in the consent agreement at paragraph 23, but consider an officer back in 2016 when this board approved that consent agreement for 240 hours, where excessive force was used when a detective stomped on a surrendering suspect, causing his teeth to fall out. Serious injury there. There is no serious injury here. That was a 240-hour. So consider another one from 2016 where two partners were out and they used force, excessive force, by pepper spraying an individual and laughing about it, abusive in their language. Again, 240 hours from this board in 2016. And then going back, all the way back to 2006, officer used excessive force when he stepped on the back of the knee and used his elbow to deliver a blow to the head of a handcuffed prisoner. 200-hour suspension. So, back in January of 2018, when myself and the Attorney General's office agreed to a consent agreement, we brought it before you because it was consistent. 240 would be consistent here today, and nothing else has changed in your rules. Now, what's important also is looking at what has happened since. Because this case has dragged on for 4 years, we actually have the luxury of seeing where the officer is and how he has been acting in performance of his duties, executing his law enforcement duties ever since. Officer Padilla, who's here today with me, has shown nothing but remarkable rebound from this one instance when he was 4 years in his career. He's got extremely positive work history. I provided 11 different letters evidencing to the Attorney General's office how this officer is looked at upon his peers in the law enforcement community as a sterling officer. This officer has also been involved in several use of force incidents since this one. Not a single complaint or any sort of discrepancy in his actions or conduct ever since. And we have 2018. This officer has twice been nominated for the Medal of Life Saving, and in 2018 he was given. He was awarded that. He earned that. He's shown impeccable service since this time, and we believe 240 hours is the appropriate amount. But why do we come back here? Because the two cooks in the kitchen said we need to sweeten the pot for post. We need to bring this back. Now, the board makeups are slightly different, but we needed to sweeten the pot, and that's why we have added the extra 80 hours. Now, at this point, that 80 hours is nothing but punitive, because this officer has learned his lesson. He's indicated that. His track record shows it. This officer is willing to acknowledge, and he stipulates to the matters in the consent agreement, there's no argument between the cooks here. We just need you to eat the soup. We need you to approve the consent agreement before you or modify it to 240 to be consistent with the suspension that you've served in the past or that you've meted out. I'll answer any questions at this time, but I think that really covers a lot of it.
I have a question. So far as being consistent, I appreciate the other cases you brought up with the time amounts, but were there other cases similar with revocation or suspension or, you know, that would be my question. Because, you know, use of force is, it really is case by case for us. And I understand the comment of, you know, he's on the ground, he's locked his fingers together, and he came over and jumped on him. And well, but when I read the report, the respondent applied a running double knee drop onto the suspect's back and subsequently delivered hand strikes to gain compliance. But it sounded like he was complying. So that's why I ask, what are those consistencies? And you know, I don't want you to sweeten the pot. I just want to know what the facts are for this board to make a decision. I think we're not looking for a sweet pot. We just want the facts so we can case by case make these decisions on use of force, which is critical for us to decide. So that's really where I'm going. I don't know if...
Mr. Chairman, can I respond to that?
Sure.
Well, you first started out with what have we done in the past. I think the cases that I've been able to pull that have been provided from post are those similar circumstances. And one big distinguishing factor between the case that I pointed out about the teeth getting stomped is very similar. However, that one resulted in a significant injury and a payout from the department on that individual. Now, the reason why I'm not going into the detailed facts as you're looking at is because we have a consent agreement here. Mm-hmm. If we were going to go into a full-blown evidentiary hearing, I could stand up here today and tell you all different kinds of facts that went into the officer's mental status and how those things are factored in for you to make a full decision. The goal here is a compromise for a consent agreement for an appropriate level of discipline. Now, the parties have both agreed that revocation certainly isn't on the table. That would be far, far inconsistent with anything post has done with a similar circumstance. And so the with the comparators I've provided you, where you have a surrendering suspect, so to speak, and the facts that are included in your consent agreement, that is enough for the 240 hours to be justified and meted out consistent with post's previous cases.
Thank you.
So I agree with you. Sweetening the pot doesn't make any difference if post is going to be consistent. And I'm sorry for the mischaracterization. I know you don't like that, but that's kind of a, it was just, you know, an offhand discussion that we had.
I appreciate it. And Mr. Brackel.
Thank you, Chairman. Mark Brackel again. So I did a deeper historical check of excessive force cases and when and if there have been revocations, when has the board revoked, and there have been some. And I saw a pattern. And the pattern is the prisoner in the back of the patrol car, handcuffed, and the officer pulls over at the side of the road and gets out and strikes the prisoner. The officer is angry. The prisoner is making comments. And so in those cases where the board has found revocation has been when the prisoner has been sequestered and the situation is absolutely safe, but the officer, for absolutely no justifiable reason, harmed the prisoner. And there are cases like that, and in those cases, the board has ruled revocation. But what's interesting is not in all of those cases. There are a few, but the predominant portion of those type of cases are the revocable cases. And the state was aware of that in the preparation of this proposal, and the state took the time to glean from the professional standards supervisors the facts behind the officer's decision to jump on the back of the suspect. And those are, again, in those first paragraphs where the state asserts that in this case, and offers, doesn't assert, we offer to the board that this case is distinguishable from those other cases. That in this case, Officer Padilla had stimulus, and there was a threat potential. The suspect had thrown a rock through a glass, and his conduct was elevating in violence. But the suspect at the last minute submitted, and that's where the excessive force occurred. We have a law enforcement experience. I can only say when I saw when I read this case and prepared for it, it reminded me of a failure in a field problem at an academy when you're faced with a use of force encounter, and at the last second the suspect submits, and then the recruit is trained to arrest and de-escalate their own force. That just didn't occur in this case. But there is no evidence that Officer Padilla was angry or that he was doing this in spite. And in fact, one of the paragraphs in the agreement, in the proposal, is he was in fear. He had fear as he was running towards the suspect. And so we just offer that as additional information.
Thank you, sir. Any comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
I'll make a motion. Alan Broadbell, I move to accept the consent agreement for the 320-hour suspension of peace officer certification for the date specified on the proposed consent agreement.
Paul Euler, I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. And we are going to move on to the next case, Mr. Hargraves, 18-088.
Yes, this is a case involving Jose Tavena, former officer with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community Police Department. The board initiated proceedings on this case in May of this year, the allegation being that on April 28, 2018, Officer Tavena fell off duty, engaged in a verbal and physical altercation with his wife. They were attending a concert at a casino. They had been consuming alcohol, and apparently due to the intoxicated state of his wife, they were not. She was not allowed into the casino. So they ended up leaving. Again, the board initiated proceedings. In front of you, you have a proposed consent agreement for an 18-month suspension from June 2nd, 2018 through December 2nd, 2019. He was terminated from the department in June 1st of 2018. state would ask that the board approve the proposed consent agreement for that 18-month suspension for the time period indicated. Happy to answer any questions.
Having no questions, comments, I'm sorry, Mr. Ayler.
Is this recommendation consistent with findings or in other cases?
I did some research on past cases. Generally, for this type of conduct, the board has gone from a 1 year to 2 year suspension, depending on the particular facts. Generally, the board will go more severe with possible revocation where there has been other aggravating circumstances such as injury or dishonesty, and that those were not present in this case.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? May I have a motion, please?
I make a motion, Tom Kelly, to move to accept the consent agreement for an 18-month suspension of the peace officer certification beginning June 2nd, 2018, ending on December 2nd, 2019.
Thank you, Chief Kelly. Is there a second, please?
Chris Putin, second.
Mr. Putin, second. Further discussion? Having none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Mr. Hargraves, moving on to 18-078.
Yes, this is a case involving Kendall Drake, officer with the Mammoth Police Department. On December 8th of 2017, off-duty officer Kendall Drake with the Mammoth Police Department was stopped after leaving a rest area without headlights on. Upon contact with the officers, they could smell marijuana, not burnt marijuana, but kind of fresh marijuana. A search of the car found a couple packets of dispensary marijuana. They were not full packets. They were kind of residual, but it was a couple packets in the car. The marijuana actually belonged to Ms. Drake's roommate, who had a medical marijuana card and who frequently borrowed the vehicle. Ms. Drake eventually resigned from the department, but was subsequently hired back later on. She entered a diversion program. There's no evidence that she used the marijuana or even purchased it. There was documentation from her roommate indicating, showing she does have a card, taking acknowledgement that it was hers. But nonetheless, it was her vehicle. She did have it in it, so there was technically possession of marijuana. In front of you is a proposed consent agreement for a 5-month suspension from May 5th, 2018 through October 5th, 2018, time period where she was not employed. We'd ask that the board consider accepting that to resolve this matter.
Comments, questions? May I have a motion?
Alan Rodbell, I move to accept the consent agreement for a 5-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning on May 5th, 2018 and ending on October 5th, 2018.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Tom Pelios.
Mark Daniels, second.
Sheriff Daniels is second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hargraves. And we are going to move into new cases. It's been taking us a while. Anybody need a break or anything? Okay, we're going to move right along into new cases. Mr. Caldwell, we are on case 19-082.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. This case, my only one presenting today, is involving Mr. Joshua Gross. Mr. Gross went through the hiring process with the Mesa Police Department, and on April 3rd, 2019, Mesa submitted his electronic appointment form to Arizona Post. On April 14, 2019, the Mesa Police Department began a criminal investigation and later charged Gross with sexual conduct with a minor, which is a Class 2 felony. The victim in this case was Gross's 5-year-old stepdaughter. The criminal trial is still pending. We're still waiting. I think the first scheduled hearing date or the first trial date is next week, but that'll probably be continued. Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you initiate proceedings. I'd be glad to answer any questions that the board members might have.
So I have a question. Cause,
yes, sir.
Just educate me. Why isn't this not like an automatic action? Is it because he has to go through due process?
Yes, sir.
Is that the reason? Okay. All right. Thank you.
So he was appointed by MESA, but he hadn't actually started date. His appointment date, MESA submits the appointment form to us electronically, but his actual appointment date was in July where their pre-academy training started. So he hadn't actually even started his employment, and actually we hadn't even done the new hire audit yet. He was arrested, you know, a little bit over a week after they submitted the electronic appointment form.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I make a move that we initiate proceedings.
Second.
Elrod, a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Caldwell. Ms. Heckel, good morning. We are moving into case number 18147.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Deputy Bricker worked at Pinal County Sheriff's Office for 6 years. He resigned August 23rd, 2018. On December 9th, 2018, around 7 a.m. in the morning, Deputy Bricker was off duty but decided to go get gas in his take-home patrol vehicle. He drove to the convenience store but never got gas because he believed that he had left his wallet containing his gas card at his home. On his way home, he collided with a parked vehicle on a residential street. Deputy Bricker advised his dispatch center of the accident and requested a sergeant to his location. During the radio transmission, his speech was very slurred, and the dispatcher had a hard time understanding him, had to ask him several times to repeat things. Once the sergeant arrived and contacted Deputy Bricker, he saw signs of impairment and called a traffic unit to come to the scene and investigate. The traffic deputy saw signs of impairment and arrested Deputy Bricker for DUI drugs. A blood sample was taken for the investigation, and it returned with oxycodone above therapeutic levels and four other controlled substances in his system at the time of the accident. When interviewed, Deputy Bricker admitted to taking the controlled substances and said he had prescriptions for them. He also admitted that he had never notified his supervisors or anyone at Pinal County that he was taking the narcotic prescriptions that he was. Deputy Bricker was terminated from Pinal County Sheriff's Office on August 23, 2018. Earlier this month, on August 9th, Deputy Bricker pled guilty to one count of DUI drugs, a Class 1 misdemeanor. Arizona Post staff researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends a finding of initiate proceedings. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hickel. Any questions, comments? May I have a motion?
Make a motion to initiate.
Mark Daniels, a motion to initiate.
Jeff Daniels, and
I guess I'll second
that. Chief Kelly seconds that. Is there any other discussion? Mr. Ehler, you look like you're pondering a question.
Okay.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Mr. Overhead, morning, sir. We are on 19031.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. First case involving Officer Nicholas Jensen, who was previously with the Gila River Police Department. On March 29th, 2018, Officer Jensen, along with another officer referred to as ME, responded to a location referencing a possible homicide suspect whose name was known as Robert J. When Officer Jensen arrived on the scene, Officer ME was already talking to the person who they were looking for, or they thought may have been the homicide suspect, and said his name was Robert. Initially, neither Officer Jensen or Officer ME believed that this individual was the homicide suspect. Then the individual was asked for his full name, and he provided his name was Robert J., which is the same name as the homicide suspect they were looking for. Officer Jensen then immediately drew his weapon, and while pointing it at Robert, began ordering him to get down on the effing ground, or he would effing kill him. Get on the effing ground. Robert instantly complied, went down on the ground. Officer Jensen then placed his knee on the upper back of Robert and pointed his gun either close to or up against Robert's head and told him that he would shoot him if he did anything stupid. Robert was then handcuffed by Officer ME. Once handcuffed, Robert was helped up to his feet, and it was learned a short time later that this individual, Robert J., was not the homicide suspect, Robert J., they had been looking for. So he was released. He was uninjured as a result of this, no physical injuries. Research by Arizona Post staff has determined that in the past similar base circumstances, the board has taken no action with agency discretion on similar cases.
Thank you, sir.
I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Comments, questions on this matter? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
On a takedown like this where you have a homicide suspect, is it typical that you would point the gun at the back of their head while they're on the ground? That seems...
Are you asking me?
We never done it.
So. I guess, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, let me kind of exactly detail. He drew his gun and ordered the individual down on the ground. And once the individual was down on the ground, and this is from a body camera video, he got down. He didn't, forcibly get on the back of there. He got down, put his knee, he still has his gun out, and you can see that he put his gun either close to or up against the individual's head. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's from the video, body camera video.
You know, my only comment would be it is a homicide case they're looking at, and I think he's taking precautions. I don't know what the training he specifically gets from the agency or what he has, but again, these kind of cases are individual, and we have to look at the facts of those and take all that into consideration when we make our motions. So, and then the consistency on what we've done in the past, I think, is also important for us to consider. Any other comments or questions?
The only comment I've got, it looks like the agency had terminated.
Correct. The agency did terminate him for policy violations.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead. Chief Kelly.
Make a motion to... leave it with the agency for their discretion.
Okay, I have a motion from Chief Kelly. Is there a second, please?
Chris Pittman will second that.
I have a second from Deputy Pittman. Any other discussion on this case? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And those opposed?
Nay. Paul Ehler, nay.
Paul Ehler, nay. And the motion carries. Thank you, Mr. O'Rose. We'll be moving on to the next case. That's case number 19-038.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Case number 2019-038 involves Officer Matthew Schneider, who is currently with the Glendale Police Department. On July 26, 2017, Officer Matthew Schneider and his partner, referred to as ML, were driving in an alley behind a Motel 6 in Glendale when a vehicle entered the motel parking lot from Glen Drive, which was pretty much on the opposite side of the hotel. Officer Schneider alleges that he observed the vehicle enter the parking lot and commit a traffic violation by not using its turn signal. Based on the video surveillance camera from the Motel 6, from the position of Officer Schneider's vehicle at the time the vehicle entered the parking lot, it appears that he could not have seen the vehicle enter the parking lot or the alleged violation. Officer Schneider approaches the passenger side of the vehicle and requests identification from all passengers or all people inside the vehicle. The front seat passenger, referred to as JW, questioned Officer Schneider as to why he needed to provide identification as he did not do anything wrong. Officer Schneider told JW that he needed to provide identification because he was a passenger in a vehicle that committed a traffic violation. Per ARS 28-1595, as a passenger in this particular case, JW was not required to provide ID. Schneider tells JW if he does not have ID, he would be taken to the station and fingerprinted. As JW continues to question Officer Schneider as to why he needed to provide identification, Officer Schneider opens the car door, grabs JW's upper arm, places his taser up against JW's shoulder, and asks him if he's going to fight. To which JW replies no. Officer Snyder then places JW in a wrist lock arm bar and tells Officer ML that JW is going to fight. Based on the video surveillance camera from Motel 6 and Officer Snyder's body camera video, JW never appears to be an aggressor. Glendale PD Officer ML comes over from the driver's side of the vehicle to the passenger side of the vehicle to assist Officer Snyder. Officer ML tases JW three times, and during this tasing, Officer ML was struck in the head with a plastic bag containing pop bottles or cans by JW's wife, who was seated in the back seat of the car. As a result of being tased, JW falls out of the vehicle into a sitting position outside the passenger door with his legs still wrapped in the seat belt of the vehicle. Officer Snyder then tases JW while he's sitting on the ground. Another Glendale PD officer, referred to as MF, comes over to assist Snyder and handcuffs JW. After JW is handcuffed, Snyder then tases JW in the back. A short time later, while JW is handcuffed, laying face down on the ground, JW begins hollering about his arm hurting and begins kicking his feet. That is when it appears that Officer Snyder kicks JW in the groin area. Officer Snyder then pulls JW's shorts down, exposing his bare buttocks, and tases him near his testicles for approximately 5 seconds. A short time later, while officers are attempting to stand JW up, he begins hollering about his elbow hurting. Officer Snyder then goes over to where JW is and tells him, "I am tired of effing around with you." He places his taser against JW's lower abdomen and threatens to tase him again. Snyder tells the initial on-scene Glendale supervisor, as soon as he began to take JW out of the vehicle, immediately JW starts fighting. Based on video surveillance camera from the Motel 6 and Officer Snyder's body camera, JW never appears to be the aggressor. Snyder tells the on-scene Glendale PD investigator the reason for the stop was the vehicle committed a traffic violation. And again, based on video, the surveillance video from Motel 6, it does not appear that he could have seen the alleged violation. Snyder also tells the investigator JW was aggressive and fighting with them the whole time. JW was kicking at them. He was trying to get away, and that he was physically trying to fight with them. Based on the Motel 6 video surveillance camera and Officer Snyder's body camera, that does not appear to be an accurate assessment of what occurred. On November 14th, during the Glendale PD's internal investigation, Officer Snyder tells the investigator the following. He observed the vehicle as it was turning into the Motel 6 lot, and it did not have its turn signal on. Based on the Motel 6 video surveillance camera and my personal reenactment of what occurred out there and the placement of the vehicles, it appears that Snyder could not have seen the vehicle turning into the parking lot or if the vehicle had used its turn signal or not. Snyder initially stated to the investigators that he could request ID from the passenger, JW, because he was a passenger in a vehicle that committed a traffic violation. Snyder then told the investigators that he could request ID from JW because he committed a secondary violation by not wearing his seatbelt. It can be clearly seen from Officer Snyder's body camera as he's approaching the vehicle, JW is sitting there with his seatbelt properly on. In summary, during Snyder's encounter with JW, Snyder tases JW once while he's sitting on the ground with his seatbelt wrapped around his legs. Snyder tases JW once right after JW is handcuffed. Snyder kicks JW in the groin while JW is handcuffed on the ground. Snyder pulls JW shorts down and tases JW near his testicles for approximately 5 seconds while JW is handcuffed on the ground. Snyder places his taser against JW's lower abdomen and threatens to tase him again while he's handcuffed. For the board's information, we do have a video that we could show if the board so desired to see it. Kind of leave that up to the board's discretion.
Thank you, sir. I would ask the board if they'd like to see the video.
We need to see it at this point.
I don't think we need to see it.
Okay.
I think we've read the case and have familiarized ourselves with it. Thank you very much.
But, and just to kind of a little bit farther, just a research by Arizona Post staff has determined that in the past similar circumstances, fact-based circumstances, the board has initiated proceedings on this type of case.
Thank you.
So I have a question. In terms of process, so we got this to the media.
Yes.
We brought it to the attention of Glendale. They didn't have a complaint from anybody?
No. Glendale did an internal affairs investigation.
Okay.
And Officer Snyder was disciplined in the form of 30 hours off without pay.
Okay. Thank you.
But we did get it from the media.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Can I have a motion, please?
Helen Rock will make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Thank you, Chief.
Paul Ayler, second.
Thank you, Mr. Ayler. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimous. Thank you very much. We will move on to the next case. Thank you, Mr. Rose. And we are moving down to 19-063. Ms. Waite, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Members of the board, Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. First case is on James Brewer, formerly with Gilbert Police Department. In April of this year, Mr. Brewer's wife contacted her friend, Officer Sarah Cox, who also worked with Gilbert Police Department. She's still currently there. She contacted her via text message and advised Officer Cox that her husband, Officer Brewer, had confessed to her that he'd been smoking marijuana for the last 3 years during his tenure as an officer with Gilbert PD. Officer Cox informed her chain of command, and an internal affairs investigation was commenced. Officer Brewer was ordered to report for an interview, and before the interview took place, he was allowed an opportunity to speak with a representative from his officers association, wherein that officer informed Brewer that the agency would require him to take a drug test. Officer Brewer immediately resigned before he was ordered to take the drug test. No interview or drug test were conducted. And Arizona Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances in cases such as this and recommends to the board that you resolve this issue in the future.
Thank you, Ms. White. Questions, comments? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Comrade Bill, make a motion to resolve in the future.
The motion, a second.
Paul Ayler, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there other discussions on this matter? Chief Kelly Jetson, comments, sir,
no.
Questions? Okay. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're moving on to the next. Ms. Waite, 19081.
Yes, sir. On Richard Morales, formerly with Winslow Police Department. In March of this year, Officer Morales authored a department report wherein he documented that he discovered marijuana on a male suspect during a pat-down search. A review of his body camera footage clearly indicated that the marijuana was actually discovered by another officer who was on scene with Officer Morales during the pat-down search of the male suspect. The video was actually viewed by the county attorney in preparation for the case, and they were the ones that discovered the information. The suspect had been arrested for a variety of different charges to include resisting arrest and possession of marijuana. However, the Navajo County Attorney's Office declined to pursue all charges based on the false information located in the department report authored by Officer Morales. He also failed to submit a supplement at the request of the county attorney in this case as well, and he was terminated from Winslow Police Department. Arizona Post staff did some research in similar fact-based circumstances in cases such as these, and recommends to the board that you initiate proceedings.
Thank you, Ms. White. Questions, comments? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Tom Kelly, make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Thank you, Chief. Is there a second?
Bob Donald, second.
And I have a second. Is there any other discussion?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Ms. Wade, we're going on to 19-061.
Yes, sir. Final case on Ryan Morris, formerly with Gilbert Police Department. In December of 2018, so just last December, Gilbert PD command staff discovered information that Officer Morris had engaged in emergency driving with a suspect in the back of his car. He was actually transporting her to the jail. And there were some concerns about his speed during this time when he was transporting her. So an investigation was commenced, and it was discovered not only on this instance, but two other instances where he violated the agency's policy on emergency driving by exceeding the posted speed limit by more than 20 miles per hour during each of his emergency responses. So he had this prisoner in the back of the car. She was kicking, screaming, and instead of pulling over and calling for another unit, he decided to activate his emergency lights and go through a red light. His reason for this was to get her back to the jail quicker. So they started looking into his other instances of driving. One instance occurred where he was en route to an injury collision. The collision had actually been downgraded to a non-injury collision. However, he was unaware of the downgrade, and his AVL in his patrol car showed him doing 79 in a posted 45 mile per hour zone. The second instance was where he was responding to a collision involving a pedestrian, and his AVL speed at that time was 92 miles an hour in a posted 45 mile per hour zone. There was already another unit on scene, and fire was already out with the injured pedestrian as well. Something to note about this incident is that he actually drove through two school zones that day. It was a Monday. School was in session. It was about 11:30 in the morning. When they asked him why he was driving so fast and if he felt that there was a problem with the speed, he offered that he did not have any collisions and no one complained of the speed, so he felt it was appropriate. He was terminated from the agency. And we did some research, and in similar fact-based circumstances and cases such as these, we recommend to the board that they initiate proceedings. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? I ask for a motion.
So I guess I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah. So because as I was reading this, it kind of brought to mind some cases that were agency discretion. He's been dismissed. It's his driving. It's the violations of policies. No injuries. So what's different with this one?
It's a mixed bag. Some cases.
I mean, it's horrible. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Some cases have been initiated on, and some cases have not. I think this one, because of the third incident where he was driving through school zones at 92 miles per hour. When there was already another unit on scene, fire was already out with the injured victim. We just felt that that type of emergency response was inappropriate.
Okay, thank you.
Definitely some aggravating factors there, but anything else? Motion.
Alan Rodwell, make a motion to initiate proceedings.
I have a motion, a second by Chief Kelly. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Thank you all. And future agenda items next. I think we're talking about the issue with academies and.
Mr. Chairman, I've got it. It's something we're already exploring right. Ourselves. We have some. We share some of Chief Rodwell's concerns. So we will bring it up at a future meeting so we can have a further discussion.
Thank you very much. Anything else for the future agenda items? Having none, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.